Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
Ready for a new and exciting career challenge? At DHL Supply Chain, you're part of a team committed to creating innovative solutions for some of the biggest brands in the world. We're recognized as a best place to work, where people are valued, supported, and respected. DHL Supply Chain is hiring for a wide range of salaried operational and functional roles. Previous experience in logistics is welcome, but not required. All opportunities, no boundaries. DHL Supply Chain. Apply today at joindhl.com.
The South Dakota Stories, Volume 7. My trip to South Dakota was the best summer ever. Now I don't need to go to Mars, because I've been to the Badlands. And I caught a bigger walleye than Dad when we went to the Missouri River. Then I rode my bike through these huge rocks called Needles. Ooh, I also saw my first herd of bison, even a fuzzy furry baby one. I can't wait to go back and see more. There's so much South Dakota, so little time.
All right, people's block party. We are out. Block party is here. I'm your host, Mike Wall. Thanks for watching. If you enjoyed, please subscribe, rate, and review on our YouTube channel, Process to Perform. You can, as always, hit me up, MikeWall68 on X or Twitter, Process to Perform on Instagram. Excited to do the show today. Our show's sponsored by Bet Online. It's down the last four teams. Bet Online has been your tournament bracket headquarters all March long. And now that we're almost down to the finals, we've still got a lot more in store. Major League Baseball is here, and the NBA and NHL playoffs are around the corner. And as always, Bet Online is the number one source for your summer sports wagering needs. So head to Bet Online today. Stay updated on all our action. And remember to use our promo code BELIEVE, that's BLAV, for your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Bet Online, where the game starts. Before I get to the, I got this RAS score thing up here, and I shouldn't, because I'm not very smart. I wanted to say that a little bit of Packer news, housekeeping before we get into it. So head coach Matt LaFleur got you know, quote unquote, caught off guard, partly by the Josh Jacobs signing, and I think, you know, partly by the Aaron Jones not being able to re-sign and having the success with that. He said that at the owner meetings. And, you know, what does that all mean? There's two questions that are important, basically. Number one, is the room now net better or net worse than it was? And number two, and this is probably easier to explain, how does the head coach get surprised or blindsided by anything in this day and age? And I think I can start by saying the first one is probably the more interesting question. And I think it's difficult because, listen, Aaron Jones for me was the best player, you know, not named back David Bakhtiari on the Packers the last couple of years. When healthy, obviously he had some injuries and you can't overlook those. And you can project that when a player, let me see if I can fix this camera because I'm so handsome that I'd really like you guys to be able to see how handsome I am. When a player is hitting that 30-year mark at the running back position, you know, certainly that history has shown and the data shows that you're going to run into some injuries. And so when you are that guy and you are hitting those numbers and you have been injured, then it's prudent for Brian Gutekunst to at least entertain the idea that you are no longer a full-time answer. Even though you, for the last however many years, you've been an incredibly valuable running back in this Green Bay Packers offense, as long as Matt LaFleur has been here, certainly, and far beyond that. I think the head coach has stated that Aaron's one of the toughest, best guys that he's ever been around. What he means to the locker room, what he meant on the field, it cannot be measured solely by his statistics. I think Josh Jacobs is a Josh Jacobs, I think, second team All Pro a couple of years ago. I mean, Josh Jacobs is a really good player, and he can he's a workhorse. He's been featured. Now, with all that being said, does he have the same kind of success in this offense? Does he have the same kind of success? Is it, or does Aaron Jones have the same kind of success if he gets those amount of those amount of carries? You know, all of that stuff. What's always interesting about this to me is Matt LaFleur runs a certain kind of offense. Aaron Jones excelled with this scheme, system, line, blocking, all of this stuff, receiving options, etc. Josh Jacobs has the opportunity to obviously be a successful mid-zone downhill runner. He's difficult to tackle when he gets to the second level. He's a fast player. He can take a right now in this point in his career, he can get 30 carries a game if that's what you want. He can be successful in the screen game. He doesn't have the same resume in terms of passing game, but I don't think that that doesn't mean he's not capable of doing it. What's always interesting in these bits are when the general manager decides it's time, it's not going to work out. What are the alternatives? Like, look, obviously Matt LaFleur knew that they were looking at Josh Jacobs. And so obviously he's probably said, oh yeah, if this doesn't work, then we would love to have a player of that caliber. It does affect the, maybe the way that you think about the running game as far as what you want to feature, at least initially. I wouldn't be surprised initially, because most of these guys aren't going to play in the preseason. I wouldn't be surprised initially if he doesn't just, you know, if he hits the ground running, great. If he doesn't, I wouldn't jump to conclusions, I guess is what I'm saying, because they are a different style runner. Certainly the way that Aaron Jones found success isn't obviously the way that A.J. Dillon tried to find success, or isn't it the way that Josh Jacobs is going to find success in terms of the way that these guys block, the way that he makes reads and makes cuts. I don't think that they're net better because I think Aaron Jones brought so much to the table. But if Josh Jacobs stays healthy for 17 games plus playoffs, it's hard to argue that that wouldn't be at least as valuable as a good Aaron Jones who plays in, I don't know, let's say 10 games. Not that he wouldn't this year, but what'll be really interesting is comparing those guys apples for apples in the NFC North when he's playing for the Vikings this year. I mean, that's going to be super interesting. And then as far as Matt LaFleur not knowing what's going on, this is how it works in almost every building. And Matt and Goody seem to have a very good relationship. They, I'm sure, have had multiple discussions on scenarios if Aaron Jones can't get in the building. And I think for everybody, myself included, you kind of thought, well, how is he not going to make it back? How is Aaron Jones not going to get this contract done? Or they couldn't possibly ask him to take that size of pay cut again. And you know, for me, I said it before, you just don't like to see a guy who's that valuable get asked to take that level of pay cut in consecutive years. You remember he started at like $16 million, went down to 11, now 11 down to whatever it was supposed to be, seven, something like that. So when he signs for the Vikings for the amount of money he did, you just go, please, why could we have not done that? And that's frustrating. And I'm sure even with Mac not knowing the numbers, that not being the part of his main day-to-day operations, he sees that and goes, oh my God, like we could have got him back for $7 million, which might not be the case. But when you see that, it's God, that's tough. I'm happy we have Josh and he's going to be a phenomenal running back for the Green Bay Packers organization. But oh my, you know, the bell cow, the guy, the leader in the locker room, the everything, back for $7 million is a tough one to swallow. But let's talk about this. I do not do mock drafts. I don't really even understand the concept of mock drafts. I don't understand I guess it's just people are excited about the sport. I do like the idea of researching people for mock drafts because I like watching film. So I get that. I heard the name Graham Barton. He's a left tackle from Duke. He is really interesting. I just got interested because he started at center there. He played three seasons at left tackle. He was really good statistically. And now he's going back and saying, I think they're going to project him at the center position. Now, this guy's 6'5", 313 pounds, and he ran a 4.97. And you guys know how I feel about guys that run sub 5.40s at the offensive line level, a position, are going to be good players. It's been proven time and time and time again. He's got a 4.97 40. He's putting work in at center. There's some things about his arm length that there's things that are good narratives and things that are bad. If a guy had T-Rex arms, that would be one thing, but he doesn't. Because your ability to use your hands in is a little bit longer than what, or a little bit more important, whether or not I can, you know. His RAS score, his relative athletic score, is top three all time at the center position because he's coming from tackle down to center. Tackles are, generally speaking, much more athletic than tackle. Wait, what did I just say? Tackles are much, generally speaking, much more athletic than center. But I wanted to digress a little bit and talk about these RAS scores because when I was in Miami, Jim Arthur, who's now the strength coach for the Chicago Bears, I can't tell if this is his brainchild or this is an offshoot of it, but he started doing this and it's super interesting. And what he was basically doing is, I'm going to give Jimmy the credit. I don't know if it's his or not, but he was basically showing coaches in a snapshot of personnel guys of, you know, based on kind of positional averages where everybody ranks, because it gave you this new look at like, who's got the highest athletic ceiling. And again, we're talking about height, weight, 40 time, vertical jump, arm length, bench press. So some of this stuff might matter to you. Some of you might not, or some might not. But from a personnel standpoint, this is a very simple way to pick your team, right? It's almost like if I was a GM and I just wanted to take my hands off the gas, I could go, I'm just going to pick the guys who have the highest relative athletic score, because I can tell you definitively that just basically, you know, without doing anything, without understanding how their brains function, anything else, these guys have the highest athletic ceilings based on what I find important. And maybe I have to adjust the relative athletic score for my team or my coaches, what I think it's important. But I can take my hands my feet off the gas and just go, these are the highest guys. I'm going to draft them. Coaches, the onus is on you now to develop what I think is the highest athletic ability. So that's kind of, it's not a cop-out, but it's kind of interesting to look at from a personnel standpoint. Like, who do I want? If I think my coaching staff is good developers of talent, then I'm going to take the highest athletic ability guys. Or if I think, for example, that if I don't have guys that can develop athletic ability or develop talent, excuse me, or develop technical skill, and maybe at some positions, I just find it incredibly important to have like really, really high athletic ceilings. Now, the limitations are obvious in the relative athletic score if you marry tape. Like, for example, Aaron Donald, is his height or leverage a strength or a weakness? Well, based on RAS, it's a weakness. Based on the way he plays, it's an incredible strength. I would imagine that each team, because this is all public information, right? Everything that's on there, I think, is public information. I would imagine that each team goes through this and scrapes the criteria that's like A, important to the personnel guys, the general manager, and then B, important to the position coach and the coordinator of, you know, obviously if you're looking for offensive line, wide receiver, whatever, like what matters to you most. And then to that offensive coordinator in the kind of scheme that you want to run, what matters to you most? This would be at least ideal. It might be unlikely, but I think if they have data, if your data analytics guys, if they just stop looking at the numbers and start going to talk to people and watch film, they'd be able to come up with their own kind of RAS scores that are super interesting. And again, it's a very easy way to cut the herd. There's some positions, I'd say this. There's some positions where natural athleticism matters a lot more than other places to a certain extent. For example, being big and strong is good at the offensive line until you get maybe too tall. Like, I think Mekhi Becton at 6'9" has a hard time getting low enough to play against guys with a great bend. Or too big, you get to 385, 405 pounds, something like that, where you just can't move your feet fast enough. So there's a bandwidth where you could get out of it, right? But it's a high end. So it's almost like a bell curve. Like, you want to get that real top standard deviation. You don't want to get too much or too little. If we remember back in the 90s in the Oakland Raiders days, like fast is good at receiver, but the Raiders used to just draft the fastest guy. Whoever the fastest 40 time was going to Oakland, or I think it was Oakland back in the day. Yeah. And you knew it. Like it was cutting. Davis was hiring that guy. Didn't matter who it was. Didn't matter if he was any good. And they flopped on it. They had, remember they had Jeff George who could throw the ball a mile, but wasn't necessarily a good, good quarterback. Like there's these things that are important, but not necessarily that important. So if I'm looking at slot receiver position, depending on the kind of things that I want to work on, do I value change of direction? Do I value acceleration? Do I value the first 10 over the top 40 speed? Like those things matter to me contextually. Arm strength at quarterback. I think they can have like a miles per hour throw for quarterbacks now that they do at the combine. Like, I don't know how much that matters really. I think most of these guys can make all the throws. Obviously you'd like a guy with a stronger arm than a weaker arm, but how much am I going to value that versus his processing speed, his footwork? You know, probably not as much. So these things are interesting, but there's things to me that you seem far more important. So because they're out in the public, because we, you know, some of the media and the guys who do podcasts and stuff like this can look at them, they can make a big deal about it, and they can base some things out of, base some ideas off of it. Here's an, I went to a website called prideofdetroit.com. So thank you for that. This is their all-time RAS score list. And you can kind of see there's some hits and some misses on this. I just picked two or three names out of each position on offense. Quarterback, Cam Newton, good. Josh McCown, backup. Running back, Justin Fargas, Jackie Battle, Edgerrin James, James Stewart. Wide receiver, Calvin Johnson, amazing. Matt Jones, remember that in Jacksonville? Oy, right? Javon Walker, Green Bay Packer. Good player. A lot of things about Javon Walker you would say are excellent. Some things from a, maybe you'd like a little more change of direction speed or something like, for, you know, from a Javon Walker side. But, you know, Green Bay Packers fans, though, he had an excellent career until he got hurt. And then Moritz Boehringer, no idea. Top four guy, though, RAS. Tight end, Anthony Beck, good career. Jordan Cameron. Jordan Cameron's a basketball player from USC. I coached him a little bit at Miami. Phenomenal athlete. Didn't translate, like he had the good year in Cleveland, but it didn't necessarily translate to him being a phenomenal tight end over the course of time. Cause what tight ends are actually asked to do. Tackle Taylor, the Wand, great player. Jared, Veldheer, Lyndon Murtha, Brian Mihalik, Brandon Brooks and Evan Mathis for guard. So the guard position, oddly enough, of all of these, top two guys were our top guys at the position. And then center, Chris Chester, good player. And then Monty, my man, Will Montgomery. I played with him in Carolina. I think he actually started for the Redskins for a long time. Monty was, let me tell you something, guys. Monty could have his own TV show. He was a unique individual. He said, this Graham Barton from Duke is an exciting prospect. Is he an exciting prospect at center and tackle? Maybe. Those are two positions where you're looking for competition. You got starters in the building, obviously, in Rashid Walker and Josh Myers, but you are looking for competition. And this guy played there for 3 years, graded out. I haven't watched every game, but certainly by some measures, he's graded out pretty highly in the run and pass. I'm going to show you some tape on him. I like it. I'll just start off by saying I like the kid a lot. Let's get some things going up here. So number 62 in the playbook, number one in your hearts, playing left tackle. You see that kind of tall, he's got that 2-point stance, got a good hip hinge. He's going to come downhill for the double, and he's a little bit out of control, but then you just see he's able to reset his feet. The number one thing that jumps off the screen is, you know, RAS score for, he's a good athlete, man. He's got hips that unlock. Really, really good athlete. Able to finish. He's downfield a lot, something you really want to see. Again, at the tackle position, he loves to strike with his hips. gets a little bit out of control at times, as you see here. But against a good Florida State team defensive line, you know, he's really moving people off the line of scrimmage. This is something just from a technical standpoint that happens with a lot of good athletes, especially, you know, you're at it. You know, I'm not saying Duke's not a good football program. I'm just saying it's not necessarily a lineman factory. There's a lot of times when you watch him from a pass pro standpoint, and it's hard to translate to the center position, but at left tackle, like, his footwork's not very good. His punch to extension isn't certainly anywhere near where it would need to be to play at the tackle position, at least in the National Football League. What you see is, I don't know who anybody remembers this, but there was about 3 years straight where Chad Clifton just decided that he was going to miss a game. He always had some sort of like nagging injury and he'd miss. And we started popping Flanagan out there. I think the first time, maybe because Frankie was still on the team. So Frankie went to center and Flanagan popped out and played left tackle. And Flanagan was so good at left tackle. We were playing the Chicago Bears and I was betting Alex Brown, who's playing defense. You never do this. I was betting Alex Brown he couldn't beat Flanagan in pass pro. Like, I was betting every rep because Flanagan was shutting him down so bad. He shut down Bruce Smith. He was exceptional. Now, Flanagan's much better than this guy from a footwork standpoint, at least right now, where Flanagan was year five or whatever to his senior year in college. But you see, you know, if you're trying out at center and you play tackle, you do have some versatility there. I think I got a little bit here. You don't like the way, you know, he flips his hips here, but everything he does, whether his hands are engaged or not, like if you like his punch extension, the way that he rolls his hips into everything is really, really impressive. So you see the double team here, and this is just a coaching thing. He's got his shoulder pads pointed towards the sideline. He needs to be vertical towards the line of scrimmage. He brings his outside hand in. This hurts a lot of guys. Coaches teach this. They teach this in college and high school a lot. And it's a terrible technique because guys get beat over the top. They get holding calls all the time. It happens here. Gets beat over the top by the linebacker. That's really just a hold. I don't know if he gets caught or not, but it's just a bad play. But when somebody comes downhill on him now, and again, you can kind of translate this to the center position. This linebacker tries to cheat one and hit the B gap and just gets mollywopped, rolled all around, does a 360. And this guy's always moving. You see the backside here. He's just got a little cutoff, holds his position, gets downhill, gets all the way across, pushing the guy away from the pile. I love to watch guys who either get guys on their backs or push them off the screen. And this guy's trying to do either one of those things every single play. We see here, and you don't love the feet, or excuse me, you don't love the hands, but you love the way this guy can roll his hips and at 313 really stop pressure. I think it's really unique. You don't see it a ton from a guy 6'5", 313, just being able to drop anchor as well as he can. His hips are powerful. You see that sub 540 coming through. You see the high athleticism. You just have to now improve the hands. The hands are inside, but really want to be able to get those things out and play in space. You're not going to be able to do this against top-level competition in the National Football League. Again, easy to say because he's not going to play left tackle necessarily. Another look here from just another position. He is a good mover. You can project this, all right? Any position, sir, you're going to square up your stance at tackle. But watch what he does here on the down block. Just absolutely knocks that guy off the football by himself. I mean, those are highlight plays for a reason, right? Like, I don't know how many people put that on their highlight tape, but you know, for me, when you're able to down block on a three technique by yourself and knock the guy 5 yards off the ball and eventually put him on his back, like that happens once in a season for most guys, okay? That's a really, really special play. And this play isn't perfect, but I want to demonstrate the awareness and footwork that he has. So obviously a tight alignment by this defensive end. It's pretty obvious for a guy who watches tape a lot, this guy's going to go inside. So he takes good footwork, bup, 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 bup. He gets a little bit wide, but he stays square and ends up cutting this guy off so he doesn't make the play. Running back can get outside now and get downhill. So you love all the stuff you're seeing, okay? And listen, he's better in the run game than he is in pass pro, but you don't know how that's going to translate to center, because how many times really do you see the center by themselves one-on-one blocking? Really? 3-4 defenses, a couple times on slides or overloads. But really, if you're looking at the entire game, you're thinking 8 to 10 times a game, you're going to be on your own. And that's really it. Quarterback gets rid of the ball. Jordan Love, as he continues to progress, you remember Aaron Rodgers, how long he used to hold it by the time he got, you know, at the end of his tenure in Green Bay, it was bop, bop, bop. Balls just fired out all the time. People don't feel a lot of pressure. Defensive linemen get frustrated. So I'm going to say this. If you said we were going to draft him to start day one, I would say you have a day one starter in Graham Barton at center. I would say you have a day one. If you were drafting him first round, 25th pick in the draft to start day one, I'd say you have a first round. You have a starter in Graham Barton. I think he's definitely more than capable of playing. I'm projecting a little bit because he goes to Duke. He must be pretty smart. I feel that way about the kid up in Oregon, though. Powers Johnson. I certainly feel that way about Zach Frazier. Although I do think Zach Frazier and this kid are really interesting for two different reasons. Powers Johnson's just, nobody moves that well at 335 or whatever he is. Zach Frazier is a four-time champion, heavyweight championship wrestler. So he's Scott Wells. Scott Wells is pretty damn good. Zach Frazier is just Scott Wells. I don't know how much he bench presses and all that. Scott Wells can bench press to the moon. But Scott Wells came in day one. He was a four-time state champ in Tennessee. He told me flat out, I stopped wrestling because there wasn't any money in it. And I remember the first time he got, somebody tried to, you know, do one-on-ones on him and they were testing him as a rookie. He just flipped him on his ass. I mean, and everyone just went, oh, like he's, and he bench pressed 500 pounds on the first day we bench pressed. So we're like, oh, okay, well, he's going to be okay. That's how I feel about Zach Frazier. And again, a lot of that's projection just because I know that what he did. And I also remember, obviously, Stephen Neal, who went up to my agent for the Patriots, Neil Cornrich. My agent, Neil Cornrich. And he said, hey, my name's Stephen Neal. I think I want to play in the National Football League. And my agent said, what do you think qualifies you to be a National Football League player? He goes, well, I played a little bit in high school. And I'm a Greco-Roman world champion wrestler. Stephen Neal started for the Patriots, won Super Bowls, had an incredible career, basically because he didn't have a whole lot of technique when he showed up. But, you know, Bill Belichick being Bill Belichick was like, oh, he's a heavyweight Greco-Roman wrestling champ. Who's going to beat him, right? And there's some locker room stories that are incredible. They're not my business to tell. But Stephen Neal is an absolute unit. Scott Wells was an absolute unit. I think Zach Frazier is an absolute unit. So I think those guys are every bit as qualified, if not more, than Graham Barton. Here's the thing about the center position. Everyone wants to talk about, okay, because 25 is a good spot to pick a center first round if you believe in any three of those guys. Maybe the best, Joe Alt's could be off the board at tackle. We've talked about some other tackle guys that are interesting. Certainly, I think there'll be a tackle there. I don't know if it's a left tackle that's worth picking up over Rashid Walker. We've kind of gone through that. Here's the thing. As much as we talk about Myers, let's watch this tape from the last game. I'm not cherry picking. This is like two series. This might be on Jump Street, the first four of the or the first series of the game. Like, we know Myers has some deficiencies. I think initial footwork for me is the number one thing. Now, he got a lot better at it. And this isn't an easy block, but it does demonstrate, like, you know, you got to gain some leverage. You can't center a step underneath yourself. Running junior's not doing him any favors, but you got to be in a better position than this. So you miss your guy. A guy comes back and makes the block or the tackle. Excuse me. Oh, that wasn't him. My bad. But you understand the point. Now we're going against a good player. Javon Hargrave locks him out. Sit down. Right. He's got footwork, balance in hands already. He's got experience. Good player, second round pick out of Ohio State. A little bit high, but ends up getting extension. Has good balance, in good position. Love how he gets leverage and angle. So This is Kinlaw, I believe, their first-round pick from a couple years ago. He just moved on. Took the inside step from away from Jenkins. Tries to attack that A-gap. We get great body position, great profile, great leverage, and good angle on Hargrave here. Ends up blocking him out of the play. Key block of the rep for the team. Creates the running lane with a great angle. Great leverage. Stays square to the second level. Now, listen, Greenlaw's gonna beat him, right? But he gets enough of Greenlaw. He makes Greenlaw run around. He takes him out of the lane, puts him on the backside A-gap. It's a good job. As opposed to taking a bad angle, letting him backdoor him into the play side A-gap, for example. This is a winning effort from both guys, okay? Talking about John Runyon Jr. here, talking about Myers coming double teams with Jenkins, all right? The backside tight end's the problem here, but this is a winning effort. He stays on the double a long enough time for a 6-yard gain. Great play. Great play. Bad editing here by moi. All right, here we go. Gets out, doesn't need to turn his shoulders, but understand it. Stays on Fred Warner, 10 yards down the field. Winning play. And again, he's pretty good, I think, at moving that human. Now, you'd like to see some more vertical movement. A lot of it has to do with footwork. But again, winning play. So, point being, I don't know that you're sitting here and saying, I want to pick up one of these guys. Why can't this camera work? Sitting here and saying, I want to pick up one of these guys over Josh this year. If one of them falls, if Powers Johnson falls to you, Zach Frazier falls to you, maybe, right? Graham Barton might be a second-round guy, quite frankly, because I think we have the 41st pick. So if he's there, yeah. Because Myers isn't going to be there forever. I think you have to make a decision on him next year. And so now you're talking about a guy you can develop, probably can be your swing guy at multiple positions. But you got some guys. I'll say this about Graham Barton. You never pass up an opportunity to draft an athlete. That you draft a guy that's that athletic if you just have an inkling that you can develop talent. And the Green Bay Packers, Stano's still in the building. I think they can develop talent, and they've proven to develop talent as well as anybody in the National Football League with regards to the offensive line. So I'm pretty confident that Graham Barton, maybe as a second-round pick, is a real unique opportunity, assuming that Powers Johnson and Zach Frazier are not there. And assuming that's somewhere where you think is a real area of need, I happen to think, you know, I watch this tape sometimes, and you have to disassociate, like, 2023 from 23-24. Myers played better in 23-24. You have to block the thought process out of Rashid Walker in the beginning of the season, where he ended up having a battle with Josh Nyman again because he wasn't playing well, to the end of the season where he looks like a starter in the National Football League, who's got a long way to go but can still be a starter. Now, with the narrative that you've heard from Matt LaFleur talking about, hey, we like what Rashid did, but he's got to work on the consistency, but there's a guy there. My thought process would be just from that language. He's talking to who? He's talking to the media. He's talking to the players. He's talking to the general manager. My guess is that if there was a really good tackle prospect there, I think they'd go with tackle over center. That's just me. I think there's more value with tackle. I think center, you could probably drop down and get a guy a little bit lower. And they've done such a good job, obviously, of picking up guys not in the first round at the center position and having some real success there over the course of the years. They've had as good – if you go back to Frank Winters, Frank, Mike, Scott, Corey, name a team who's had four guys that good in succession, right? So – and I'm not saying they didn't hit with Josh or not, you know, but I think he maybe hasn't performed as well as those guys had early on. But still has time to turn it around. So, you know, with that being said, My guess would be that they go to they would look at the tackle position. We've obviously talked about some other areas of need. There could be a player there to be made at safety. There could be a player there at linebacker. I like that offside defensive tackle, always looking to try to upgrade at that position, even though they do have some guys there that can play. I like Carl Brooks, like Devontae Wyatt coming into his third year now. So you look at this and go, there's some dudes. You're going to need a third linebacker. I don't know if you have the second right now. I think you do with McDuffie, but I don't know how they feel. But you're going to need a third linebacker who's a stud. They brought in McKinney. Now, McKinney could play the star position like he did at Bama, and you can still look for some safeties in the draft or free agency or trade. Stephon Diggs just went to the Texans on trade today. Like, you got to be let me tell you something. If you got money sitting around, the Texans would be pretty good, man, if you're a betting guy. I'm not. But they're going to be pretty damn good. That's a scary-looking team right now with the pickups they'd have this offseason. They've already won the offseason in a lot of ways, and they haven't even hit the draft yet. So I got a couple listener questions I'm going to get to. Number one, what noticeable difference between the NFL team's organization you played for? Was Green Bay more unique than Seattle and Carolina? More unique? Well, it's unique because it's not owner-held. So if you have an owner, you fall into this bucket of, like, does your owner write checks, or is he invasive? Is he Jerry Jones? Like, Jerry Jones being on the most invasive owner, right, on radio shows, pressure, probably going to the locker room talking to guys all the time. That's how Jerry Richardson was a little bit. Or, like, back in the day when I was in Seattle, do you have, like, a Paul Allen who rolls up to the 100-foot dock on Lake Washington on a seaplane, brings out all his rich buddies and goes, I own all this, pretty awesome, right? Gets back in, writes a check, and leaves, right? So, not as invasive, just kind of happy to be there. I'm sure he had objections that he wanted to meet, but he was writing checks, smiling. He wasn't telling you. He was, like, putting pressure on the team at all. So I think there's those two things that are a big deal. I thought Seattle was a fantastic organization. I fell in love with that play. You fell in love with the city, the whole thing. Like, Green Bay is very unique, though, for that reason. Not having an owner is just it's different in the way that people go about business. And when you're drafted there, you don't really know the difference. But going from there to having a Jerry Richardson as the owner in Carolina, some people might like it, some people might not. It's just certainly different in the way things are going around, because there's always this looming character that everybody has to answer to. And, you know, certainly I think the hard thing when you have owners, just as a general statement, if you have owners that are like football fans, well, listen, like, billionaires like to be around athletes, and athletes like to be around billionaires. So what can happen, unfortunately, is you can have a high-ranking member of the team have the owner on speed dial. Well, if things aren't going well in meetings, or you get an argument with the coach at practice, guess who the guy calls? And so that happens. And I'm sure people are going, there's no way that happens. I'm telling you that happens, and it happens all the time. You'd be shocked how often it happens, where a player is calling the owner bitching about a coach. Which testing measurable at the combine is most applicable to offensive linemen? Yeah. Most applicable? Gosh, I would say, I mean, listen, I don't know if it's most applicable, but, you know, everyone says the 40 is the least applicable. I've made the argument time and time again. You got a guy who can run the 40 pretty fast. You know, you have to obviously meet some hurdles as far as height and weight. You know, you get a 6'5", 250-pound offensive lineman as a 4'7", you're not going to be very impressed with him. But I think explosiveness matters. I'm really a big proponent of explosiveness at the offensive line position. That's why one of the reasons I like Graham Barton so much. So I do think that is really important. How big is the transition for rookies going into their first offseason? Colleges are better set up now for early success? No. The last part of that question, absolutely not. I think they're way, way worse off. Listen, NIL is actually making it worse. Transfer portal is making it worse. You're not anywhere for 4 years getting good in coaching from, you know, one or two guys. Building on a foundation, you know, you could be transferring around. Coaches are getting moved left and right. So you're not getting that solid foundation that you used to have. The hours are different now. You don't have that. You're not building the base that you used to have. Rookies, and it's different in each position. Offensive line play has been atrocious coming out of college for a number of years. I think nobody really argues that point. Athletes are great. It's not, this is technically, they're not where they should be. I think from a football standpoint, it's different. You see the quarterbacks for a long time only being able to play out of shotgun. That was an issue. Just the verbiage is different. The way you have to process information is different. So I think all of that, listen, like the college systems are great and NFL teams use them because they're effective. But when you think about, like, you would never imagine Peyton Manning playing in a college system because he's like the complexity of the way his mind works would be just so far above what they're trying to accomplish in the college system, right? Like he wants to, you know, these really complex guys want to be able to call their stuff the line of scrimmage, and they're looking for like shifts in weight from different players. So on film. So I think just learning how to be a pro, learning how to watch tape like a pro, like a master poker player, the routines and everything, I don't think are that difficult to pick up on. The speed of play, the pace of play. Listen, even if you're at Alabama, like you're not going to play an NFL caliber guy every week. Right. And every day at practice, like you're not, it's the competition isn't the same. It's a lot closer to than let's say you're at a, you know, like a Division II or 1AA school. It's a lot different than that, but the pace of play, all of that. And then obviously the demands that you have on you now from the media, the expectations with the pay, although NIL may be a little different, the ownership, like all that stuff plays into it. Right. But ultimately, your ability to process information are going to be a huge, huge indicator of whether or not you're going to have long-term success. Considering Rasheed Walker's performance last season, how much of a priority do you think finding a top left tech? I think it's a high priority. I just think if you're at 25 and you just look at what the needs are on the team, offensive line, if there's going to be a really good offense, there's going to be a really good offensive lineman at 25, whether it's guard, whether it's center or whether it's tackle. I could sit here and go left tackle, center, or guard. If there's a first round caliber guy, you should just take him because you might have guys that you've been grooming. That's fine. You might have guys that they'd have to supplant. That's fine. There's nothing wrong with competition. And if you've got a guy graded that highly at 25, you should take the guy because it's probably your biggest area of need. That's my personal opinion. So, and that's tough to say because, you know, like I was like everybody else, you get drafted, you work your way in, you get the opportunity, you can make the most of it. And then what do? They start immediately trying to draft your replacement. And all you got to do is beat him out every year. That's what happens. I was talking to a guy today. I was working with an offensive lineman this morning, and he's getting to that point in his career where I think he's going to his third year where I'm like, listen, you're a starter. You're going to be a starter in this league for a long time. You're going to be a star in this league for a long time. You can ask your backup to work together in tandem as a team. You can teach them everything you know. You can help them come along because you have the confidence and understanding that this is what's best for you. This is what's best for the team. I'm good enough to know that I can tell you my secrets and you're not good enough to do them as good as I do them. So once you kind of get that attitude of I'm confident for myself that I want to help the people around me, I want to grow the people around me, then bringing in people to challenge you for your position, you know, you're always going to have that there, but you can really help affect in a positive way that organization and that individual by sharing that information, working together, become the best version of themselves because you're confident enough like, hey, I got this. I'm not going to try to pull any punches to share secrets from you or withhold secrets from you because I'm confident in my abilities. So my 2 cents, take it for what it's worth. You can find me again at MikeWall68. Process to Perform on Instagram. Thank you, as always, to Bet Online for watching this show. We're going to be back next week with another one. You guys got any ideas of what you want to see? Obviously, hit me up. We're getting pretty close to the draft, but like I said, not mock draft time for me. Talk to you soon.
The South Dakota Stories, Volume 5. South Dakota seemed like the perfect place to unplug, but I ended up connecting to the world around me. A world where each sunset was painted, where I felt adventures pulse with every step, and where cold water trickling, pine swaying, and grunting bison became my favorite soundtracks. I just wish I didn't have to leave. There's so much South Dakota, so little time.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.